Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
0-2. Yes, sir. Got the strikeout. Teal, the throw in the first. Ball game. Sox end the six-game losing streak and take game one against the Padres. Southside, stand up.
Chicago White Sox win yesterday, finding themselves at 58-96 last night. Beating the Padres, Dylan Cease on the wrong end of that one. Yu Darvish, the pitcher tonight. Padres obviously very much playing games of consequence. The White Sox, if they can go 5-3 in their last eight, they can avoid 100 losses. This has been a much more watchable brand of Major League Baseball, especially in the second half for these Chicago White Sox. Just 3-7 in their last 10. It has fallen off a little bit, but there was a stretch where they were winning plenty. But even more than the winning was just the brand of baseball that Will Venable has them playing. And it fits what we have seen coming in the organization. And I've been talking to you about it and want to talk to you about it a little bit more. It's Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. And let's welcome to the show, Brian Bannister, the director of pitching for the Chicago White Sox, who joins us on the Circa Sports Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Brian, thanks for some time on a Saturday afternoon. How are you?
Doing well. Great to be here.
Thanks, man. How do you measure, you know, what this season feels like to you in terms of what your tasks were, what the overall vision was? Does it feel like it's been a success for you, despite what the record says, because your role and your scope is much bigger than that?
Yeah, I knew coming in September 23 that there were great people here, people that I was going to enjoy working with. And you start to dive into, you know, what systems are operating behind the scenes, what are the processes, how are decisions made. And I think the biggest thing that the fans are starting to see come to fruition is just everything that's been building behind the scenes. You know, Atomic Habit style, you fall to the level of your systems. And we had to build from scratch a lot of systems. And so you start getting into how do we make this team better? How do we make this sustainable? How do we become a playoff and World Series team? And it had to start with just how information flows. How do we evaluate players? How do we teach and develop these players? And just a lot of things that could be upgraded over the last 2 years. We've been upgrading, and you're starting to see the fruit of all that hard work.
What is some of that fruit tangibly? Like, whose success have you watched over the latter half of this season on the big league level that fans can think about? And you say to yourself, man, I think a lot of what we did helped set the table for this guy to raise his game to where it's gotten.
Yeah, I think when we came in, the pitching was ahead of the hitting, just objectively on the roster. And we were willing to intentionally trade away some of the pitching assets and put that burden to replace that pitching on the pitching group. And by doing that, we were able to acquire young bats, which in today's game with kind of the lower trade liquidity out there, you have to have valuable pitching assets or you have to be picking at the top of the draft in order to acquire big time bats nowadays. And so just really going out and getting some impactful bats, supplementing the roster on that side of the equation, and then going out and the Shane Smiths and the Adrian Housers and the Yoenis Gomez's, and seeing internal pitchers take a step forward, the Jordan Leisures, et cetera, really just doing a lot with guys that lack major league experience and aren't costly on the major league payroll has afforded us the opportunity to keep getting better on the run producing side of the equation. And we have more pitchers in the fold that are ready to contribute next year. And we have a lot of guys coming back from injury next spring training and early part of next year. And we're just going to have a nice stable of arms. They're going to come up and really contribute to the major league team to complement the hitting.
Yeah, so many of the names we know coming back next year, maybe not till mid-season next year, but we'll see. But yeah, Jordan Leisure, sneaky fantasy baseball pickup there, Brian. So thank you for that. I mean, that guy saves and holds, but dominance in any direction. Last time I talked to you, you mentioned about Grant Taylor. I think you said, quote, best arm I've ever seen. That made a mark on the psyche. But the Grant Taylor plan is still a little bit in flux, right? Like, what do we think? Is he a reliever by the time spring training comes around next year? Is he a starter? Where are you on that thought process right now?
I think the thing that everybody agrees on is he has no fear out there. He can pitch in any role. He's taking the ball in the ninth. He's taking the ball as an opener. He's taking the ball in the highest leverage situations in the game, and he's done it without fear, and for being a rookie, being in his first go around at the major league level, that's what you want to see out of somebody that truly has character and has high octane stuff. And you know, I think he's carved out a number of nice roads for himself going forward, but to see him, you know, last night going out and closing out that game and having a couple of dominant outings recently, and really starting to put it together, landing his curveball, complementing his fastball, kind of pitching in that north-south tunnel attack, it's been fun to see. And so I think, just like Garrett Crochet, these guys are writing their own scripts, and we're there to support them and continue their development. But in the short term, there's no doubt that since he's been up, he's had a significant impact on the major league staff.
Some of the listeners chimed in with some questions. Here's one. Wondering why some veterans have been getting innings this past month and last month, while certain potential call-ups, whether it's Peyton Pallett or Addison Coffey, do not come up. What gets weighed into this thought process for August and September innings in a season like this?
Yeah, I think since they changed the September call-up rules, back when I was a coach in the Red Sox, for example, we called up virtually all of the 40-man roster in September. And since that has changed the rules on that, I think you have to be more intentional about adding pitchers prematurely to the 40-man roster, and that gets out of my scope of responsibilities. But I think the goal is to continue to develop these guys. You know, somebody like a Tanner McDougal is pitching down for Birmingham in the playoffs right now, had a tremendous year. He's a guy that can hit 99 miles an hour, still into the seventh inning. Christian Opper had a great year, lefty throwing 102. These are all guys that, you know, at some point have to be added, and I'm a big fan of putting them into leverage roles in the big leagues and getting a taste of that, even if they do stay a starter, because it helps to continue their development as they face tougher competition, tighter strike zones, better zone decisions, and all the things that major league hitters bring to the table. So I think the big thing is just making sure we're not making transactions before we have to, and we're placing a lot of value on those 40-man roster spots, and making sure that the situations we do call these guys up into is in the best interest of their development.
Talking to Brian Bannister, the director of pitching for the White Sox, and we could talk, you know, more specifics and other White Sox stuff, and I want to, but just as a pitching brain, what's your favorite thing about Kershaw? Or your least favorite, maybe. I know there were years with the Giants in there. Like, what? Give me something about Clayton Kershaw that you'll take away for the rest of your career.
I think what defines him is the hitch in his pitching delivery. It's such a tremendous attribute that those are the little quirks that you will see no pitching coach intentionally tell a pitcher to do. But when a pitcher inherently stumbles upon a stylistic element like that proves to be such a compliment to his mechanics and his arsenal, and just gives hitters fits on a year-over-year basis throughout a career. It's such an enjoyable element to watch because it almost looks like a glitch, and it's so intentional, and it throws off hitters' timing. And I really wish those little things, the way that Verlander slides over on the rubber when he's in the windup, they're things that nobody really teaches, but these pitchers stumble upon something that disrupts the hitters and just continues to allow them to have success over extended time periods.
Plus, it's so fun to watch the Gene Garber and Luis Tiantz of my youth coming to mind here, you know? Like all the Johnny Cuetos. How does he keep his balance on every pitch like that? Have you had young prospects who come and try to do that and can't do it? He's got to be an athletic marvel to stay balanced like that every single time his whole career.
It's something that I never take away from pitchers that they're able to do it organically. And I compare his in particular to the drop beat from a drummer. Everybody else is operating on a constant rhythm, and Kershaw has this ability to operate in between beats and really just throw hitters off. And if pitching is disrupting timing, he's one of the best ever to do it at disrupting the timing of a hitter.
Wow, I love that. You're speaking my language with the drummer. Yeah, it was Warren Spahn who said hitting is timing and pitching is disrupting timing, right? I love that. And the drummer can feel all those different things. Who else has what Kershaw has? David Price, it's similar, right?
Yeah, you see, I had Johnny Cueto in San Francisco. You see the Nestor Cortezes. There's guys that have... whether intentional or unintentional, have almost glitches in their delivery, and it's something, Tyler Anderson, there's guys that it takes their game to another level because it's almost maddening and enjoyable to watch at the same time. But hitters who are trying to make their living off of figuring out that timing, it just drives them crazy, and they'll come back to the dugout just shaking their head every time.
Have you ever tried to add it with anybody? Hitters add a toe tap as a timing mechanism. Have you ever tried to add something like that for a pitcher?
Yes, and it's really successful. A lot of the Japanese pitchers have been able to do it. I was teammates with Hideo Nomo, and when you see these guys able to add pauses or hitches or glitches into their delivery, it ends up adding such a wonderful both artistic and disruptive elements of their game, and not everybody's capable of it, but the guys that do tend to have an outstanding body control.
Yeah, Shota Imanaga's got a little bit of that for the Cubs. There's a little bit of a pause in there. Talking to Brian Bannister here on The Score. Hey, Brian, I was told the AAA hitting stats, I was told this by somebody in development with a different team, that AAA hitting stats should not be weighed as much as we, the media, do, because the good arms are either lower or they're already in the big leagues. Is there any credence to that? When we're looking at offensive numbers at AAA, do we give them too much credence because the quality of pitching at AAA is not what it used to be?
I think on the player development side, AAA respectively drives us all crazy because if you're in the PCL, you're dealing with outlier elevation and the way both the ball flies on the hitting end of things and the way the ball doesn't move on the pitching end of things. It's extremely frustrating. And then you get to the International League and there's a lot of small ballparks. Charlotte is one of those where it's very small. The footprint is downtown. The wind is always blowing out. And so it definitely distorts things and generates a much different park factor, which is just how many runs are scored for that ballpark relative to a much larger pitching friendly park like Birmingham is. And so oftentimes it definitely plays into our development plans. Do we skip pitchers over the AAA level just to help avoid those ballpark changes, along with the fact that the baseball physically changes? You go from Double A, where it's a minor league ball, and then you go to AAA and it's a major league ball, which has much different seam and leather characteristics. And you combine all those things, and it can be a very frustrating experience for pitchers because the hitters end up being so much more productive.
Thanks for indulging some of the general questions. Let's get back to some White Sox stuff here with Brian Bannister, who I love talking pitching with and talking baseball with. Hagen Smith, after recovering from the elbow injury, reworking the mechanics a bit, just the other night, what, 10 Ks and five hitless innings in the Double-A playoffs, a tremendous performance. What do you take away from his year at this point?
You know, Hagen's put in great work all year. This being his first full season, you know, first off, I'm not a fan of the MLB draft being moved back in the season, just because pitchers, after their college season, they tend to deload and just really protect their bodies and their arms until the draft occurs, and they know what kind of money they're going to be making because it's such an important stepping stone in their career. It's really hard to then put pitchers back out in the competition in the second half of the year the way that we used to with an earlier draft in short season baseball like when I played. And so you get through this first year, which almost is becoming non-productive on the field, and then you come back and you start to get to learn a pitcher what he needs in between outings to just build a routine, build some systems, keep him maintained, along with you're trying to identify what are his best biomechanics, what should his grips be, what should his pitch shapes look like. And for Hagen, because he had the little health issue early with his forearm, and we were trying to figure out when he came back from that, what is the best way for him to load both for performance and to stay as healthy as possible long term. And we iterated through a lot of ideas, a lot of positions, because he was moving differently initially from how he moved during various times at Arkansas in college. And ultimately, between the hard work he put in and the collaboration of our pitching group behind the scenes, we think he's in a really good place, and we've identified the biomechanical positions that he needs in order to have both optimal velocity. He's been up to 99 recently and had much better outings performance-wise, and then also to help him be in the zone as often as possible and keep those walks down. So we think with three of the last four outings being far superior early in the year, that we're identifying where he needs to be and then building routines and systems around that to support him from start to start.
Had a listener who wanted to know about Tanner McDougal and where he stands for you on a long list of interesting arms in development.
Yeah, Tanner put in an outstanding offseason with Cressy. He really overhauled his body comp and got into tremendous shape. We worked with several things in performance camp in January and throughout spring training on altering his plantar rotation and how his body moves a little bit. And the big thing that stood out is just his improved strike throwing in 2025. He always had an electric arm and elite spin tool on the breaking balls, but he went out there and really started throwing more strikes and pushing the envelope as he got promoted to Double A. And between his ability to hold 99 miles an hour deep into games and his ability to spin the ball, I think he's put himself on the map as far as the entire prospect industry and really upgraded his stock by going out and having such a fantastic year.
And Noah Schultz, he's going to be in the Arizona Fall League along with Hagen, right?
Yes, and he's just been battling patellar knee tendonitis, and so it's impacted his ability to land consistently and execute. You know, he's so tall, he's still growing year over year, and you know, it's been a minor setback just because I think it's part of his growth and just making sure that tendon is calmed down in his landing knee and making sure that on the strength and conditioning side, they're putting a good load on it so that it strengthens and avoids future cases of patellar knee tendonitis. Will be really impactful for him to go out and be able to pitch with much more consistency as he continues to get older. He's still so young, so tall, and has tremendous upside, but that knee tendonitis was definitely holding him back slightly this year.
So it's hard to imagine, like, big-time free agent pitcher when you have all these options. But as you look at veterans, what do you target in veterans that you might want to come in here? Martin Perez, great dude. You know, Adrian Hauser, a tremendous sign-and flip success story for you guys. What might you look at in the offseason in terms of profile for any veterans to add to this bunch?
I think the big thing is not only pitchers that we can add value to and raise their ceiling and come in and have solid production for us. But more importantly, be able to be a leader and a mentor to the rest of the very young pitching staff and the arms that we have on the way. I think we value very highly their clubhouse presence, their investment, and those others around them. You can go out and just throw money at somebody and have them come in and pitch for you, but I think we're looking for guys that have a much broader impact throughout the organization and the clubhouse. And, you know, Martin Perez was definitely that way and was tremendous this year, not only on the field when he was healthy, but behind the scenes and in helping those younger arms around him. And I think that's the kind of high character pitcher that we're looking for.
Really cool year for White Sox fans to watch the pitching development on the south side. Brian Bannister, the director of pitching. All right, last thing I got to ask you about. If there was a PitchCom device that you could use in the dugout, I wonder how many teams would do it. Because it's fascinating to see the Marlins calling pitches for these last 9 or 10 games from the dugout. Do you think, I mean, how many out of 30 organizations, if I were to just throw that at you, Brian, would be interested in calling pitches from the dugout if that were available?
It's something that is rampant in college baseball. It's the norm. And then on the minor league side, we've been aware the Marlins were doing it all year with their minor league teams. And I really think it comes down to if you feel like there's knowledge gaps or there's underperformance with your major league pitching staff relative to the perceived talent level of that pitching staff, then there might be something going on with the pitch calling or sequencing. And so I think teams wouldn't necessarily default to calling pitches for their staff, but I think if they felt like they were underperforming their level of physical talent, I think some teams would definitely be interested in helping their catchers call that game as a way to both educate them and make sure that the pitching group wasn't underperforming.
I was talking to an old school pitching coach this morning, actually, and he said, well, it's the nerds have won. The nerds have won. And it's like, you, Bannister, are you a nerd or are you a player? You have this ability to bridge that gap and put those worlds together. And I guess that's what the job is in a lot of ways these days, isn't it?
Yeah, and I default towards letting the pitcher and catcher call their own game. I think the pitcher knows what pitches are feeling best in his hand. And I think the catcher, especially those veteran catchers, have gut feels and are good at picking up on the nuances of what the hitters are trying to do in the box. And so you start out every game with a game plan, but oftentimes the opposing hitting coach and the opposing hitters decide to mix it up on the fly. And yeah. I think being able to react accordingly is a really nice attribute for a pitcher and catcher battery. And that's something that the people upstairs might not pick up on as quick.
Yeah, you know, I always hear about like throwing with conviction. It would seem to me like having some say in the game or feeling like at least you're making the decision with your catcher might give you a little more conviction just on a human level, right?
Yeah, and as long as there's adequate preparation going into a game where you know the hitters, you know their tendencies, honestly, by the pitcher and catcher calling their own game, it avoids any finger pointing or Monday morning quarterbacking where, you know, you gave up that homer, but, you know, I didn't want to throw that pitch. Somebody else called it for me. There's other side effects that you have to be prepared for if somebody else is calling the pitches, because in the moment, the pitcher might not be feeling great about that pitch or that location, but those calling the pitches might not be aware of that. And so you do have to be prepared for the flip side and be able to deal with the ramifications of taking the responsibility away from the pitcher and catcher.
I always get smarter talking to you, and I appreciate it. Brian, thanks so much, man. Congrats on a nice developmental season, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. That's Brian Bannister, the director of pitching for the White Sox. For those that don't know, the Marlins called all the pitches from the dugout yesterday. And last night, and they're going to do it the rest of the way. They've been doing it in their minor leagues, and it's a fascinating dynamic. I think Brian spoke to it very well. I decided to call Don Cooper today, former White Sox pitching coach Don Cooper. And I talked to him because my perception was that Coop used to call pitches for A.J. Pruszynski from the dugout. You guys remember watching that? You remember seeing A.J. looking into the dugout constantly? And I remember the conversation being like, I think Coop's calling pitches. He's calling pitches from there. And so I just wanted to get clarity on that. And I was able to get that clarity. And Coop did not call pitches from the dugout. What was happening, A.J. was looking for to another coach, whichever coach they had doing strategy, or maybe it'd be the manager. And he was looking, whenever there were runners on, every pitch, he would look over to see, are they going to step off? Are they going to do a pitch out? Are they going to do a pickoff throw? Are they going to do a snap throw? Like, what kind of options are they going to use to try and control the running game and deal with the running game? That's what AJ was looking over for, not for pitches. So this is new. This is new, and to me, it's fascinating. You're not allowed to have a pitch-com device in the dugout. But if they were, I was told today by somebody I was talking with that 25, maybe 27 out of 30 teams would say, you know what, we'll go ahead and call the pitches. We'll go ahead and take care of it. You give me a pitch com and I can do it. As of right now, what the Marlins are doing is crazy. They're using this like old Little League system with a two-number signal that correlates to numbers on an index card, a laminated index card that the catcher has, and he looks down and sees what pitch it is. And they have to change that system, maybe even every inning. They have to change that system to make sure the signals don't get stolen along the way. It's freaking bananas, but they've chosen to do it now, and they're easing their organization in on the major league level. And I think it's fascinating, the dugout calling pitches instead of the catcher or the pitcher. I wonder if that indeed is the future, and maybe it is. All right, we've got a few more minutes here with you. Two more segments, in fact, of Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Phone lines are open. I want to talk to you, especially White Sox fans. You have been wanting to talk. You've been wanting to hear some thoughts on the offseason and on the season that was. I want to hear from you right now, okay? Show us you're up for it. 312-644-6767. That's the number to hop on in. What do you want them to do in the offseason? Is this season a success? To me, it is. As weird as it is to say that with 98 losses, I look at organizationally, our job is to zoom out in a moment like this and see if things have gotten better. And to me, they absolutely have. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. It's me, Matt Spiegel, here with you on a bonus hit and run here on The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Balls and strike. Shot by Miguel Vargas, his 15th of the season, and you gotta love this early lead in Chicago.
Highlight courtesy of CHSN. By the way, word came yesterday that that entire broadcast crew will be back for year number three. That came 2 days after an article in the Chicago Sun-Times where the writer Jeff Agrest voiced an opinion that is incredibly common around all of MLB and really pervasive in Chicago media, to be quite frank, that it was time for the White Sox as an organization to move on from their play-by-play voice, John Schriffen. They are not going to do so. The White Sox fired back, couple days later via MLB.com and Scott Merkin. And so John Triffin will be back along with Steve Stone in that booth. I was thinking about this. I have not talked about John specifically much this year at all, because it's my opinion on him and that is extremely, I think, well known. And if it's not well known, you could go back and look and you could Google and stuff like that. And I don't want to beat a dead horse. And I think that horse has been dead since it got here. The horse arrived dead. The horse was not doing well when it arrived. That's a whew. So it is what it is. I think it's a very odd decision. I think it's a very odd and unfortunate decision to not take the opportunity to make a change at play by play. That person in that role is in many ways the face of your organization. They are the connective tissue with your fans, trying to give voice to what you are doing and what the possibilities are. And next year is a very important year in that regard, as you are trying to build connectivity and show everybody where you are as an organization. And I don't think that you know, having a play-by-play caliber voice such as John is the right way to go for that organization. I don't think he's good enough. And that's just the way it is. So, but anyway, wanted to make sure I commented briefly on that. I don't enjoy talking about it because I don't like ripping people. I really don't. It's no fun. Doesn't feel good for the soul. You know what I mean? Just doesn't. So I don't like doing it. But I got to comment because remember, like I told a guest earlier in the show, I'm an opinioneer. This is the life we've chosen. But anyway, back to the White Sox on the field. You heard the home run from Miguel Vargas right there. A nice bounce back season for Miguel Vargas, who is now still in pre-arbitration, making $770,000 this year. One more pre-arb year next year. Lenin Sosa still in pre-arbitration. Chase Meidroff, the same. Colson Montgomery has multiple years of pre-arbitration left to go. You've got a lot of these young position players who are making absolutely nothing. Edgar Caro has multiple years of pre-arb left. Kyle Teal obviously does. Same with Corey Lee. Corey Lee has one more year, then he gets to arbitration in 2027. But the way that Chris Getz was talking, next year looks to be a season where all these young players are going to continue to have a chance to develop, to have playing time and develop, most of them anyway, that they're not going to bring in a bunch of free agents to try and make the organization take a step forward in terms of competitiveness. That's what it sounded like after 3 to 4 consecutive non-committal answers from Chris Getz about whether the offseason was going to be full of, you know, free agent acquisitions. So, look, if they're not going to do that, and you have to assume after the 3 or 4 non-committal answers that that's what they're going to do, then there's room for Luis Robert's $20 million. So, of course, you pick up that option and you try to trade him, but maybe you don't even do it. There's plenty of room for that. You don't have to try and move on from Andrew Benintendi necessarily, you know, unless you need to make space for somebody like a Braden Montgomery. But, like, where is the offensive improvement going to come from? The way that Getz talked about it, he thinks development. He thinks that enough of their young core of position players has a chance to develop that he just wants to make sure that they have runway and space to do it. So the guys you end up thinking about are Benintendi. The guys you end up thinking about are Mike Tauchman, who's got one more year of arbitration left. He won't even be making much. It's kind of staggering that Tauchman has another year of arbitration left. He's 34 years old. But maybe Mike Tauchman stays along with Luis Robert. And you don't make a decision to make room for some of your outfield kids until one of them presents themselves. I hope it's an enormously active trade offseason for Chris Getz. I hope he makes some definitive moves, some strong and definitive moves based on his knowledge of their young players, maybe some of them that we've seen on the big league level. Which catcher do you like better? Who do you trust more, Edgar Caro or Kyle Teal? Teams love young, toolsy catchers who can hit. go ahead and make a definitive choice. Maybe deal from that strength. You know? Figure out a way to be proactively smart on some of your young pieces and some of those young pitchers. Are you convinced that both Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz are absolute keepers? Or can you take one of them and use your knowledge to try and fill the gaps that you have in your prospect capital? I want to see an active and engaged trade-off season from Chris Getz, because I don't think the free agent activity is coming anytime soon. It speaks with you here on 670 The Score. Let's go to the phone lines. White Sox fans, you are open to chime in. But until then, we go to Ben in Queens on Hit and Run here on The Score. What do you say, Ben? How are you?
Hey, I was driving around trying to be useful to my wife on Saturdays, and all of a sudden I look down and it's Hit and Run. I go, oh, my God. You know, I'll just say one thing about the White Sox. The Cubs, okay. Look at what they've been going with player development. They had to go through that with Matt Shaw. It's working out pretty well. Last year, they had to do that with Amaya and with PCA. It's worked out well. You know, so if they have the people in place, I think Will Venable is doing a decent job. But on to the 80-20 split that is most deservedly so with the Cubbies. Yeah, I heard that bit too. So listen, first of all, Speaks, you know, another freaking great season Hit and Run. You do such a great job. You give us a space to do this. I love you so much. I know it's been a hard year with the loss of your father, but yet another great year. You know, for the Cubs, I just wanted to say, you know, your team of the moment, I just got some money in my account because they hit the over on 82.5 wins just this afternoon. Okay.
Wow.
And this week, I don't know about you, but I had the Cubs come in. I had the A's come in, 71 plus. My favorite bet that I won was the Dodgers under 103 wins. And I also got the Phillies winning the East. But anyway, the Cubbies.
Wow.
The Cubbies. Listen, you want to go with Imanaga? I don't know if you heard the tete-a-tete between Cole Wright and Bruce Levine a couple of days ago about who should go first.
I did not.
Bruce is quoting, you know, Matt Boyd's home stats that are incredible in Wrigley this year, and that he's been your best pitcher all year. So he suggests Matt Boyd first and then Cade Horton second. Cole Wright wanted Cade Horton first. Now, I agree with you that Cade Horton should go second. Why? Because he's been a stopper. He is a bulldog. If you're up 1-0, you're going to clinch that first series. If you're down 1-0, guess what? You are going to be locked up at 1-1 apiece because he's not going to give up any runs. I like that you go with Shota. Shota's my guy. If it was Shota or Matt Boyd, I'd be fine with it, but definitely Cade Horton second. I love you, Speaks. And listen, I hope you hired a band for the bar mitzvah, because, you know, you can get them to play bump, bump. You can get them to do that. Every bar mitzvah I had, there was some crazy request. You know how this is. Love you guys. Take care. Goodbye.
Thanks, buddy. Ben in Queens, he's the best, man. I mean, the hit-and-run callers that we have cultivated through the years just makes it so cool and very, very personal. I appreciate the thought about losing my pops. Yeah, it's going to be a weird baseball postseason without my pops. Even at his advanced age of 92, we would be in touch very, very frequently during the baseball postseason. He would he'd stay up and as best he could and watch the games. And this schedule that's upcoming, I suspect the Cubs are going to end up with some afternoon games here, which will preempt Spiegel and Holmes a little bit. But that means we'll get to do some post-game. And my dad could have been wide awake and perky for those and heavily, heavily engaged. Lots of good thoughts there from Ben. I will say, I'm not the biggest and most active gambler myself, but those season-long baseball bets are great fun. They really are. Red Sox over came in for me as well, as did the Tigers over. That came in for me as well. I'm in trouble on the fun one. Red Sox more wins than the Yankees. I mean, it's still possible, right? It's still conceivable that it could happen. Red Sox are two games back of the Yankees, but they got to make a charge. That is for sure. But it's crazy how much of the schedule still is going to matter. Everything is relevant. So much of what's happening here is relevant. Even the White Sox tonight with an opportunity to set the Padres back, you know? I was texting with somebody last night, and I was telling them, I was talking with them about the White Sox beating the Padres, and they were like, and I was talking about the Dodgers beating the Giants, and the guy's like, helps my Mets. So, all these different fan bases interested. The Royals are still interested. The Rays fans still find themselves vaguely interested. But anyway, the games themselves, the Diamondbacks are suddenly right there. Now, the Mets have won two in a row and starting to build back up a tiny little cushion. They're two games up on the Cincinnati Reds, three up on the D-backs, four up on the Giants, who I think are now in some trouble. But my goodness, it has worked in terms of building relevance here in late September. It's 670 The Score. We'll get you a little closer and get you a little more ready for Cubs and Reds, which comes your way just after the top of the hour. You'll hear from a starting pitcher who is all too happy to do whatever he's got to do to help the ball club in the postseason. It's one of my favorite things about postseason baseball. We'll talk about that next here on Hit and Run on 670 The
Score. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
Back at PNC Park, and Jack Wilson about to throw out the first pitch, and what a memorable time for him. He said that this is probably the best moment of his baseball life right now, being at this ballpark again, not only as a Pirate, but with his son, of course, Jacob Wilson of the A's, and there they are in 2025. How about in 2006, the opposite, Jacob to Jack. He was Jakey back then.
Folks, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me in terms of emotional, wholesome moment? Jacob Wilson, the all-star shortstop of the A's, threw out a first pitch when he was 4 years old to his dad, Jack Wilson, who was the Pirates' shortstop. And yesterday, when the A's were in Pittsburgh, his father, Jack, instead threw out the first pitch to his son, Jacob, who's now, as I mentioned, an all-star shortstop. Unbelievable symmetry. That is just crazy cool. Jacob Wilson, when he got to the visiting clubhouse in Pittsburgh, he saw that at his locker was a big pile of pictures of young Jacob with his dad, Jack, in the old Pirates clubhouse. Just, you know, so all of the Pirates organization welcoming Jacob back now as a member of the A's. That's just incredible. I can't imagine how cool that must have been. Unbelievably wholesome, great stuff. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on 670 The Score on Hit and Run. Yeah, it's crazy. If you're just joining us, you're like just kind of tuning in and thinking about why is baseball getting talked about? It's because baseball's awesome. It's because we needed to find a way to add a little Hit and Run into your September, and we did so today. The Cleveland Guardians, they won their first game today, and the Tigers lost their first game today. So what has happened now is that the Guardians are 1.5 games back. They were 9.5 games back 10 days ago. 10 days ago! Now they're 1.5 games back. They've picked up 8 games in 10 days. By the end of the night, if they win the second game of their doubleheader, and why not? Because they've won 14 out of 15 and 9 in a row at this point. They could be one game back of the Tigers, and you've got an unbelievable collapse that is taking place. It was a 15.5 game lead on Cleveland at one point. If Cleveland comes back and takes the division, it will be the biggest division deficit that any team has ever overcome. Besting the 1978 Yankees, who came back on the Red Sox from 14.5 games back. So, I mean, it's unbelievable. There's great stuff happening all over baseball. And then it gets really good eventually when we get to the postseason. I mean, it's already kind of happening. One of my favorite things in baseball has always been when it's late in the postseason and everybody's available, especially a game seven, of a World Series, but really game seven of any series, when you got to win and you got to move on, like the starting pitcher from 2 days before will be asked, hey, you got anything? If I need you, you got an inning for me? What do you got? Just everybody's willing to do whatever the hell they could possibly do to try and help the team do its thing. And there's something about that that has always hit my hippie sensibilities or my karmic sensibilities, or maybe it's my youngest of five sensibilities, as the seven people in our family all had to find ways to make it work every once in a while, right? So, of course, I loved this when Jameson Taillon was on the morning show with Mully and Haw the other day, and they were talking postseason with him.
I mean, just off the top for that first series, I'm really not sure yet. This is like a Bill Belichick answer, but I'm just focused on my next start in Cincinnati. But I know how Counts likes to do things, and he's a great communicator, but I also know he doesn't like to get too far ahead of himself. You know, he would never tell me, like, oh, you're going to be in the bullpen. And then if, God forbid, if someone got injured, he would feel bad saying, like, oh, now you're going to start. So he kind of waits until decisions need to be made to make them. And then he's obviously great at communicating them from there. But I really have no idea. And it's kind of exciting. Like, I don't care. I just want to help and participate. And, you know, whatever's needed of me, I'm happy to do it. So there's no ego here. I know how hard it is to get into October. I know there's a lot of great players that don't have those opportunities. So like, I'm just more than happy to just be a part of it.
Really? Any role will
answer.
Do.
It's a great answer.
But I mean,
no, really. Yeah. When I was younger, I probably would have cared more, but now it's like, I mean, on the starting side, we've got Cade Horton, who's had one of the best second halves of all time. And then we've got Shota and Boyd, who have been unbelievable for us. So, you know, we've got some great starting pitching options. And, you know, I know it's going to take all of us to get to where we want to go. So, for that first series, who knows? And then, you know, going forward, I'm happy to do whatever.
Man, that is so cool. It's exemplary in terms of his baseball character and his human character. It's also great leadership. It just inherently, just by being who he is and expressing it the way that he is, and you know he's expressing it that way privately, how do you not see a guy making that kind of money who has, you know, is that accomplished in MLB? I mean, imagine you are a younger player, you know, a younger pitcher or what have you, and you realize, yeah, man, I'll do whatever the hell you want. Okay, all right, here we go. You know, if that means... I mean, it's not going to mean that, but the equivalent of like, hey, Pete, we need you to pinch run this game, this series or whatever, this thing instead. We need you to be ready for that. Okay. All right. You're cool. Whatever you want. I got it. It's great stuff out of Jameson Taillon, and I cannot wait to see the Cubs in the postseason. This has been a really fun show. Thanks to everybody who helped. And that means Tyler Farengel, who found the low brass. By the end of the first segment, Tyler, we got there, man. Thank you, dude. Appreciate you. Thank you so much to Sean Sears, who was hanging around and helped out a little
bit
at the top
of
the show.
Sean helped me out a ton today. Thank you, Sean.
You stepped up, man. It's what he does. Whatever the role is. It's a postseason bunch we're putting together here. Thank you so much to you, the listener. Thanks to Boog Shambi for coming on the show and Brian Bannister for coming on the show. I am Matt Spiegel saying thanks so much for listening. Be back Monday as part of Spiegel & Holmes. Cubs baseball against the Reds is coming up next right here on 670 The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.